Funding for New York Now is provided by WNET.
Additional funding provided by the Leo Cox Beach Philanthropic Foundation.
Winner of a New York State Emmy for Best Political Program, this is New York Now.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to New York Now. I'm Matt Ryan. My partner from the Times Union, Casey Seiler, is off this week. The month of July can be pretty light on news. The legislature is finished at the end of June. Lawmakers go back to their districts, leaving opening pretty quiet. But we got a whopper this week. Former Assembly Speaker Sheldon Silver's 2015 corruption conviction was tossed on Thursday. Joining me now to discuss this is Matt Hamilton of the Times Union, Josefa Velasquez, formerly of Politico New York, but now with the New York Law Journal, and Joe Spector of the USA Today Network. 2015 was the year we saw both legislative leaders convicted, Dean Skelos from Long Island, the former Senate Majority Leader, and Shelley Silver. News comes down Thursday, Joe, that Shelley Silver's conviction overturned.
Yeah, I mean, real shocker in a lot of ways, just because of the gravity of the charges against him and what he faced. But, you know, this is, while it was surprising that it actually happened, we've been seeing, in recent months and ever since this O'Donnell decision federally.
Former
last
Virginia
year.
Governor.
Right. And, you saw that, well, maybe this was a glimmer of hope for Shelley. And sure enough, it was.
Yeah, I mean, everyone who has been convicted in the past, 5 years has gone back and said, well, let's appeal in a post-McDonald world and see what happened. But what's interesting with the Silver case is while McDonald, essentially the charges were vacated because the jury instructions were improper under McDonald, the appeals court said your challenge to the sufficiency of the evidence in this case, we're not going to uphold that. That's the evidence is there. This may be distasteful, but we have to throw it out basically in a technicality. So now he goes to retrial, and if the evidence was sufficient enough that the judges decided not to overturn on that, you have to see what a jury says the second time around.
In the Southern District, Josefa said that they're going to try him again, correct?
Oh, absolutely. They're going to do it again. But now the prosecutor's challenge is having to navigate this minefield where it is completely narrower than what they used to have. So they have this higher standard of what constitutes an official act. And how does that play out with the McDonald case, as Matt mentioned? It's a lot harder this time around. They're going to have to throw away some of the evidence that may have not been so solid the first time around because the jury instructions need to be clearer in this post-McDonald world. And speaking of, Dean Skelos, his lawyers also filed a letter yesterday with the court saying that his charges should be vacated as well because the jury instructions were the same and nearly identical as the ones that Silver got. So it's going to be a fun few months.
Yeah, that's remarkable. You look at, and you just go back to Joe Bruno's case, right? I mean, convicted, case was thrown out, goes back, second trial, and he's found not guilty.
Yeah.
So, when you go to a second trial, like Josefa said, I mean, you're dealing with a whole other set of circumstances. Plus, if you're Sheldon Silver's attorneys, you know what's going to be presented. I mean, all the prosecutors have kind of put their cards on the table. So now, you're dealing with a whole other trial, and who's to say he's going to be convicted again? So it really just leaves a lot of questions.
Well, and you mentioned Joe Bruno. I mean, for defendants and defense attorneys and people like Joe Bruno who were convicted the first time, tossed an appeal, and acquitted the second time around, this emboldens them. I mean, Joe Bruno has made himself an advocate for, federal prosecutors should be using their limited resources in much better ways. They shouldn't be going after, what he would probably consider frivolous cases. And so this just backs up his argument that, look what happens in the end. Why did you waste all this time and money and effort on doing this? This is the taxpayers' money that you're using, prosecutors. Maybe figure out a better way to use it.
Yeah.
And the former U.S. attorney, Richard Hartounian, for the Northern District that tried Bruno, has told us that, we're going to see outcomes like this over and over again unless Congress acts. And I have a feeling that Congress will not act to, make any sort of changes to the federal bribery laws.
Yeah, a lot of people were speculating just that yesterday. Let's talk about the reaction from around the state. Governor Cuomo was asked about this yesterday in Buffalo, and what did he say?
Well, he just said, let's see the process play out. He didn't really take a side either way, but what you really did hear from was from reform groups, good government groups, even some lawmakers saying, how is what happened here not criminal? Sheldon Silver ended up with $4 million that he got from these various schemes. You know, the critics say he enriched himself as a result, but it goes back to what's legal and what's not, and this quote-unquote official act. What's deemed an official act? Is it an official act that you in New York are allowed to have a private job and collect a, you know, a salary on the side? How does that comport with your official duties? And that's sort of what's got caught up in it in the McDonald case and now with Shelley Silver.
Right. Well, with this, lawmakers have tried to restrict outside income in recent years and try to beef up the reporting requirements for outside income, particularly for attorneys, you know, reporting your clients, et cetera. But again, this is a federal case, and this is a congressional act that needs to be done to reform the Hobbs Act or the Honest Services Statute in order to strengthen bribery in a world where the definition has been narrowed so much.
We've seen that outside income really go away for some lawmakers. Jeff Klein stepped away from his business, the leader of the IDC. John Flanagan did the same. So we'll see how if that continues. But what does this mean, if anything, for the legacy of Preet Bharara? Because he's the one who brought these charges against Silver and Skelos and really became a hero to a lot of people across the state and the nation in some cases.
Well, I mean, let's see what happens with the Dean Skelos appeal. I mean, that appeal was heard in May, and who knows when that decision comes down. I mean, it's not... I'm sure that it's disheartening to see. He tweeted yesterday, the evidence was so strong. This case was a good case, and look what happened. It's a shameful act.
Right, especially now that he's not in office. It's going to be interesting to see how, you know, his former deputy June takes on this role and how they do and how this case plays out. It's going to be, you know, challenging for them, as Joe had mentioned. Everyone knows which cards are on the table. They know what evidence to present. How do you outsmart, you know, the person sitting on the other side of the room once the trial begins?
But it seems like, you know, in these cases, Bruno being the exception, that the juries are inclined to convict these lawmakers of it, and they're able to see the relationship between the money that they've gotten and whether or not that was proper considering their public jobs. So, you know, you saw it with Skelos and Silver and some of the other cases, Tom Libous, you know, were able to get convictions down there. So will the juries continue to see it the same way?
All right, in other news, as they say, our friend from the Daily News, Ken Lovett, reported this week that the MTA, which is under a lot of pressure right now for the numerous subway troubles down in the city, in 2016 sent $4.9 million that it owed to the state. And according to Ken's story, it was directed to go to the Olympic Regional Development Authority, directed by the Cuomo administration. The three ski resorts that they operate, Bel Air, Gore, Whiteface, you remember, all had a terrible season in 2015, 2016. We had such a warm winter back then. This did not sit well with a lot of people, did it?
Not by any means.
We heard Mike Gianaris, who has really come out strong about, listen, the MTA is a disaster right now. We've seen the long waits down in New York City, but he proposed some legislation that, you know, in the future, you're just not going to be able to do this.
Well, right. I mean, you know, the MTA situation is really taxing Governor Cuomo's popularity. We'll talk a little bit about that, too. But, you know, just how much money can they put into the MTA? I mean, it seems like it's just... You can't put enough money into the MTA right now. I mean, you're dealing with a system that's 100 years old. You have lines that are 50, 60 years old. It takes 5 years to get new subway cars, the governor was saying. So when reports come out, the money's going not to the MTA as initially thought and going to upstate ski resorts, that raises eyebrows. But it just gets into the overall issue of there's hundreds and hundreds of public authorities in New York, and, you know, money's going to one, and then in the state's defense of this one, they said, well, the MTA owed the state money, so instead of the MTA giving the money to the state, we said just give it to ORTA for the upstate ski resorts, and it just gets all, you know, you just don't know where, you know, where these things are going, one authority to the other.
Right. this affected, as Joe mentioned, the poll numbers for Andrew Cuomo. The Quinnipiac had their latest poll. He went from 52% to 46%, which I believe they said is his second worst showing ever. Anytime you're under 50%, it's a little cause for concern.
Yeah, I mean, it's not it's not great. It's still a plurality, so you have that. And the other polling To this point, I mean, Quinnipiac, the last time that they polled, he was on the incline. Siena has showed him on the incline. So we'll see where some of the other polls have him. But, you know, the MTA stuff does not help. The grades that Quinnipiac did, like a grading system of him on the MTA, and they were not A pluses by any means.
Right.
And, I mean, the other interesting part of this poll is New Yorkers continue to say, you shouldn't run for the
White House.
Don't run for
governor.
Please don't leave.
I'd like to see a poll, you know, once the so-called summer of hell, we're in the midst of it, what his polling numbers say then. Because if he's at his, you know, bottoming, or second half of the bottom in polling numbers, you know, as the MTA issue and as the Long Island Railroad issues get worse, how does that affect his polling numbers in the suburbs, where he has done, you know, pretty strong in the past? So it's going to be, you know, insane to see how much of that affects his polling numbers.
No question. That's so important for him to keep New York City. We know upstate, you know, he loses 40-some-odd counties of the 62. But, you know, that the base of support is in New York City. And if New York City's feeling angry because of this, these MTA issues, that could affect him in 2018.
No question. I mean, you go back to 2014, right? I mean, he lost narrowly, but he lost everywhere outside the city. I mean, upstate, Rob Astorino beat Cuomo. Cuomo won fairly easily, you know, 13 points, I believe. So, because of the strength in New York City. So the question becomes next year, can a Republican candidate, it's always that 30% threshold that a Republican candidate like George Pataki was able to get. And so if a Republican could come in, get that 30%, do well upstate, well, that's the recipe for victory. And so, like Josefa said, you know, will some of this subside by next year? Will some of the problems be alleviated? Maybe Cuomo will do better. But, you know, really, he's got a, he seems to recognize it, you know, at least recently, he's kind of tried to take more ownership of what's going on down there.
Josefa, you had an interesting story this week, a problem that we've seen far too often, sewage overflowing into a nearby body of water. We've seen it upstate in cities like Amsterdam, which is about 30 miles west of Albany, but it happened in the Capital District twice.
So yeah, after a series of rainstorms, we saw this past week that there was what's called discharge, not necessarily overflow of sewage, into the Hudson River from the city of Albany and Troy, which, as disgusting as it may sound, happens all the time. It's the fact that it took, you know, several days for the city to report it. They have, you know, 4 hours to report it to the Department of Environmental Conservation, and then, or I'm sorry, 2 hours, and then the DEC goes ahead and reports it to the public to make sure that people, you know, don't go to the, into the water, don't drink the water because there's bacteria and God knows what else in there. And they didn't do that. So it's not necessarily, it's not necessarily that this doesn't happen. It happens all the time. It's just the fact that they didn't report it on time.
And it wasn't just a few hours. I mean,
it was days, weeks, actually. So, I mean, tens of thousands of gallons of raw sewage spilling into the Hudson, which, you know, is icky on its own. But it happens all the time. It's just, you know, as someone from the city of Albany said, it's just a technicality.
Yeah, that was the quote that stood out.
It was just a technicality that they are getting in trouble for not reporting it on time.
And they said people were on vacation, right? Some of the workers who were supposed to report this, they were on vacation. They didn't have a backup plan. And yeah, it just goes, I mean, you just see these reports all around the state, problems with water contamination, obviously Hoosick Falls being the most significant one in this area. And it just, you know, it goes to the whole question of the state's infrastructure, water infrastructure. The state's going to put a lot of money towards that in particular. But, you know, you just continue to see these kind of issues coming all around the state.
And I mean, what's the alternative? I mean, can you build a sewage treatment plant big enough, cheap enough, you know, on the public dime that you can actually handle these overflows, these discharges? Or is this just, you know, this is what it is?
Yeah. All right, a little less than 2 minutes. This is our first brand new program since the legislature came back for a final time. They passed mayoral control, something they couldn't do at the technically the last day of session, but they came back and finished their work.
Yeah, they did. And, you know, it ended up being more significant, the special session, than probably was considered on the onset. They had to do the mayoral control because that ended at the end of June. But then when you get lawmakers here, they start saying, well, what about this? What about this? And before you know it, they had a deal not only on mayoral control, but to re-up the sales tax extensions that expired, and then also the Mario Cuomo Bridge. The Tappan Zee Bridge, Cuomo wanted to make sure, or not, you know, he wanted to get that bridge named for his father, and they did that as well.
And also, we saw, let's see, I guess this was back in March, where two Western New York senators, Rob Ortz, a former senator, I should say, George Maziarz, were brought up on charges by the Attorney General, Eric Schneiderman. Joe, I know this is your beat, Rob Ort, out in Western New York. His charges were thrown out.
Yeah. I mean, we're talking about Shelley Silver and the cases there. We shouldn't forget about those. Rob Ort's case was thrown out because of same thing, same side of thing, grand jury testimony, and the judge, you know, the announcement, Eric Schneiderman says he's going to try to retry that case, or is considering it. And in George Maziarz's case, that's continuing. But he's now he's arguing the same kind of thing, that his case should be thrown out just like Ort's was, just like Shelley Silver and Dean Skelos. So you got the cases up here and the cases down in the city.
All right, we'll have to leave it there. Our great thanks to Matt Hamilton of the Times Union, Josefa Velasquez of the New York Law Journal, and my fellow bearded journalist, Joe Spector of the USA Today Network.
That's right.
The national news media has been in the spotlight like rarely seen before, with President Trump calling large chunks of it fake news. So this week's New York Now poll question asks if your views on the news media have changed here in 2017. Let us know by logging on to our website, nynow.org.
He has been, for me, the mother's milk of maintaining myself, because I wake up every day, I see what he says, I get fired up.
Also up on our site is a brand new podcast Karen DeWitt conducted with longtime columnist Fred LeBrun of the Times Union, who has been a close observer of New York State politics for decades. LeBrun, who says we are living in an era of extreme politics, talks about whether Andrew Cuomo or any other Democrat could defeat Donald Trump in a hypothetical 2020 matchup. Our website is where you can also catch up on any of our past programs and find links to us on social media, including Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter, where our handle is at NYNow_PBS. You'll also find a link to the excellent Capital Confidential blog. It's also at timesunion.com. Many people across the country would agree that our civil discourse has deteriorated over the past few years. Attacks, sometimes uninformed, can be regularly found if you're on social media. Well, one former New York gubernatorial and congressional candidate is hoping to fix that. How? By going back to class. Zephyr Teachout gives the class some homework.
Take out your pencils or pens, and you're going to need them for a little bit later as well. Your assignment is to ask a lawmaker a question.
But the Fordham professor isn't teaching law like she normally does in the Bronx. Instead, it's civics at the Kingston Library to concerned residents in the Upper Hudson Valley. It's a four-week class hosted by the Good Work Institute.
I haven't taught civics before. I've been a lot involved in organizing, I've been involved in politics, I love history, but I've never tried teaching it before, and it's really amazing to teach to a range of people, and I'd love to try to do it again in different formats, and I'd love to see lots of people taking this up.
You may remember Teach Out primaried Andrew Cuomo in 2014, and with little campaign money won a surprising third of the vote.
I believe he is not fit to be president.
She ran for Congress in the 19th district last year, which included the city of Kingston, but lost to Republican John Faso. After the defeat, she's stayed involved politically and is currently a part of a lawsuit with the Citizens for Responsibility and Ethics in Washington, suing President Donald Trump for violating the Constitution's Emoluments Clause, which outlaws federal officers from accepting payments from foreign governments. She's teaching this series of classes alongside Ulster County legislator Jennifer Schwartz-Berkey.
Zephyr brings the big picture. She understands the law. She understands a lot of the philosophy of government. And I understand the grassroots, and I serve as a local legislator. So it's a good combination of activism, engagement, and theory.
I think it's incredibly important to get off of chatting and complaining and even marching with people who share your views and actually get in direct interaction with the people who are making decisions. I think once you have, whether it's testifying or a direct conversation, it actually changes you in some fundamental way to be involved in the process. I think on the one hand, you realize both how much easier it is than you think. So one of the things that we're trying to do is say, you don't have to have any special skills to be fully, completely engaged.
Teach Out had some advice for the week's homework assignment.
I can tell you this as somebody who's run for office.
don't ask multi-part questions. Now, it's so hard because you finally have an audience. You're talking to your congressman, and you have 10 questions for him, and you can't believe that you're going to not ask all 10 of them. But if you're talking to a sophisticated politician, if you give a 2, 3, 4, or any number part question, they're going to pick the question they want and answer that one and totally ignore all the others. Okay? Relatedly, so single part question. I know it hurts. Save the rest for Twitter. Right?
The next week, members of the class shared their stories.
I emailed Hector Rodriguez, the minority leader of the legislature. And I had had an experience where when I changed my address, I put on the motor vehicle form that I also want to change my voter registration address. And about 6 weeks later, I thought, I never heard back. I went to motor vehicle, and no, I was not re-registered. And they said they'd had other people complaining about that. So I just wrote to Hector. I didn't know if he was the right one. And I said, are you aware of this? This is what happened. And if you're aware of it, what are you doing about it? And I didn't hear back from him.
My query was, what can be done about campaign finance report? When are we going to limit the unlimited giving of LLCs that we don't know where this money is coming from? Who is behind?
My strategy has been to pester the staff, figuring that the congressman doesn't give a damn about me, but if I can send enough postcards and emails and such like and make the staff's life miserable, then they will then report to their boss.
Something you did not hear from the instructors: resist, a word many protesters against President Trump have used, especially on social media.
Well, the goal for us is to teach these concepts from the standpoint of, at the very least, mutual respect for both sides, which we think is probably the crux of the problem right now. Also, we're not really bringing them the ideas in order to argue one particular position, but more to argue that there are positions, and when taking one, you need to be really prepared with facts and background, and in order to be credible, really bring knowledge, enlightened awareness to the table.
Some protesting is important and has its role, but protesting should always be part of a larger strategy and scheme. And I actually think the most valuable work comes out of the direct local organizing and then engagement with local lawmakers.
Before the final class wrapped up, Teach Out gave some final thoughts to the 50 or so people who had spent the last 4 Thursdays as her students.
This is fun, but this is not just for fun. This is very, very serious business. And there is no way without citizens who are not elected, but citizens on their own, choosing to fully occupy the incredible powers that you have right now, that we are going to be able to actually return our country to a more democratic, open, and loving place.
Occupy America.
I believe that love, anger, and knowledge, if you bring love, anger, and knowledge, you can do almost anything. I'm impressed and moved by the love, anger, and knowledge. Not that you've shown so far, but you're about to show.
Yes.
Interesting how things turn out. A number of people expected Zephyr Teach Out to win that open Hudson Valley congressional seat in 2016. But the election didn't go according to plan in a number of races, as we know. All right, this past week, New York put a spotlight on the awareness of invasive species. There were programs run up and down the Empire State, including near Tupper Lake. That's where our videographer, Brian Flynn, and I traveled to go along on a paddle in the upper Saranac Lake watershed in search of milfoil.
This stuff grows real tall. These plants in here are about 4 foot. Multi-stem plants, and they get about that fat. So they cone up and just fall over each other. So we'll go down, find where the root ball is, dig it out with our hand, throw it in the bag. Mm-hmm. Once these bags get filled up, we'll give it to our top water, Brianne over there, and she'll bring the bag back to the boat, and then give us a fresh bag to start all over again.
One reason why we've decided to move into Fish Creek Campground, variable leaf did not exist on the main lake up until 2014. And then we started seeing it moving out onto the main lake. This is where we determined that we need to get to the source of the variable leaf, which is in the campground.
Our full story coming up next week. And that will do it for us. We leave you today with more footage from our trip. I'm Matt Ryan. Thanks for watching. And we'll see you next time right here on your local PBS station.